Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson! Each week we chat to a different guest about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably. Morning, and welcome to episode 11 of Conversations Against Living Miserably. First off, I just wanted to start by saying thank you to everyone that's been so kind and given us so many wonderful reviews and been tweeting us just with really nice comments. You have no idea how much it means to Lauren, myself, the guys at Dave and Calm as well, actually. It's really rather incredible. Anyway, this week's guest is Daniela Isaacs. Daniela is an actor and writer who's one-woman show Hear Me Raw, and that's raw as in R-A-W. Doesn't really work as a play on words when I say it out loud, sorry. Has had four sellout runs and has been nominated for a Mental Health Fringe Award. Daniela worked as a wellness guru before falling into what she calls the wellness trap, and her show is all about whether the idea of wellness is actually good for us. Today we speak to Daniela about wellness, obviously, that was bound to come up, our misguided ideas of perfection, and blenders, for some reason. That bit goes on for a while. I tried to edit it down. Speaking of editing, this episode also guest stars Lauren's cough, which I tried to edit out, but frankly got bored of doing that, so now we all just have to live with it, and if you have a problem with it, just feel free to tweet Lauren, really. I'm sure she'll appreciate that. If, as usual, you could rate, review, subscribe to the podcast, that would be amazing. Our mission with this is to let people know it's okay to have these sorts of conversations, that people aren't alone, and by sharing stories, we can help each other, and we would like to get that message to as many people as we possibly can. Also, all the money from adverts you'll hear during the show goes to Calm, so the more people that listen, the more money that goes to a brilliant charity. Anyway, that's quite enough of me. Here is Lauren and myself bothering Daniela Isaacs. Daniela Isaacs, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me. This is lovely.
Yeah, welcome.
Very nice to be around people.
I feel like we've got more space today, and I don't know why.
It's my very small presence.
Right, we're going to start with the first question we ask everyone.
Right.
When was the last time you felt calm?
Before I came out of the womb. It's true. I wish it wasn't. Yeah, probably. I mean, I did, when I was told that this was going to be the first question, I asked my friend, would she ever describe me as calm? And she almost threw her tea in my face. I wouldn't say I'm calm very often. maybe when I have sex, sometimes I feel a bit calm.
Sometimes.
Occasionally.
Sometimes when I have a bath. But to be honest, even when I'm having a bath, I'm like reading a magazine, watching something on my laptop and on my phone at the same time. Mm. I've started meditating.
Okay, ooh, how's that going for
not
you?
Not very calming. It's not very calming right now. Sometimes it is after.
I said the same number when I went to Pilates. I was like, it's meant to be calm. And I was like, why is it making me so angry?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I'm a sucker for, and this really goes against, if we're going to talk about Henry Rory, it goes against this, but I am a sucker for like the really hippie yoga teachers, because sometimes I listen to them and I'm like, maybe this is like the most maternal mothering thing I've felt since I came out of the womb, because they're telling me everything's okay and they're very nurturing. Aww. And calming. I sound really calm today, don't I? Yeah. Hey.
My first yoga lesson was a bit like my childhood as well, in the fact that they just kept telling me I was doing it wrong and then they asked me to leave the class.
Did you really get chucked out of the class?
That's about
my
right.
My dad got chucked out of his yoga class as well, but I don't want to know why. He did tell me that.
We need a men's yoga class.
Yeah.
Where they can just all misbehave.
Yeah, yeah.
Do it wrong together.
How dare right. you? This podcast became very sexist.
Yeah, exactly.
All men are clumsy shits.
Well, no, we have like... At my gym, we have, like, sort of women's-only time in the weight section, because the girls can feel... Again, not all girls, but some of the girls can feel a bit intimidated. And I get that yoga, when I used to go, it was predominantly women. So maybe the men are intimidated and they need, like, a little... Menga class.
Maybe. Yeah. I think men are often... Yeah. I mean, we're talking for an entire gender here, but I think often people do feel intimidated when they go to a group class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, completely agree. Ooh. Going back to the sense of calm question.
Yes, yeah.
So in your show, award-winning show, is it an award-winning show?
Well, it was nominated, but come on, let's just lie.
Award-nominated show. We'll cut that bit out, it'll be fine. You discuss kind of wellness and like your life of living with kind of being a wellness guru, as it were. Mm. Were you calm when you were doing that?
I really persuaded myself that I was,
yeah.
If that makes sense. So... I'll just give a little bit of a background. Yes, I did make an autobiographical show, which was about my journey through the world of contemporary wellness. And I say wellness with a capital W because it's an industry. It's not the true meaning of the word. And I think during that time, I became a kind of wellness religious believer. And like with religion, I found answers, or what I thought were answers, in that way of life. So it kind of gave me rules, and rules make, I think, life a lot easier, because we're going really deep, really fast here. It gives meaning to the world, which I think often feels is incredibly chaotic. So yes, during that time, I think I did... My anxiety appeared less, but I was making myself very sick.
Yeah.
I kind of really controlled my food. I really over-exercised. It affected my social life. It affected my sex life. It affected everything. And so therefore, no, I was the opposite of calm, but I was very good at acting.
After going through all that, when the kind of wellness is still creeping up as a... alternative, or kind of like a message that you get told quite a lot, to you need to try wellness.
Yeah.
First question, how do you feel about wellness as a thing that's still going on at the moment? And second question, is there any wellness techniques that you have taken into your day-to-day after going through this kind of stage?
Yeah, I think if anything seems like a quick fix, I'd question it.
Yeah.
And wellness with its hefty price tag just appears like the perfect answer, doesn't it? You know, and with the perfect poster girls being, I don't know, Gwyneth Paltrow, Deliciously Yellow, or whoever else. So now I feel quite free, actually. When I listen in, and unfortunately, I listen into conversations, or fortunately for me, because I get to laugh and then write them down, but with mainly women a lot, either talking about food, exercise, and now what's even more dangerous is this kind of self-care movement, which I think is sometimes when the balance has tipped, isn't self-care, it is the opposite. I feel quite free of that, and I think of it as quite political, because I'm kind of going against an aspirational movement.
Yep.
However, I think there are things from that world, like with anything, that are incredibly helpful, but it's as long as you don't place your happiness on them. So yeah, like I still would order a matcha latte as long as it doesn't cost £8.50 and enjoy it. Or I might, like I just said before, go to a yoga class and really enjoy it. But I know that that isn't the kind of core answer to me finding calm. But it might be a contributing factor. Does that
make
sense? Do you practice? Do you have any like self-care practices that you...
I tried the colouring books.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because that was, for a while, that was the whole narrative. Like, if you've got anxiety, if you're stressed, do this colouring in. And I remember there was too many to choose from, and that stressed us out. Because which one do I pick? And then I missed the delivery when it came, because my postbox wasn't big enough. And I was like, oh, my God. And then I spilt a cup of water on the booth.
The worst.
And all my picture just, like, melted in front of us. And I was like, oh, and I'd really sort of bought into, like, this colouring book is going to make me calm. Like, this is going to fix all my problems. And I think my anxiety went through the roof in the 3 days that I owned it. I was like, no. But then I was like, have I done something wrong? Why is everybody else who's colouring in calm? And I was like, you're not. None of you are.
Yeah.
Buying into bullshit. That's what we're doing.
And that's what I mean by that. I mean, I'm not, I love colouring in, but that's kind of what I mean by this kind of freeing feeling of recognising, oh, wait, you're just trying to sell me something and I won't play into that.
It's like you're tapping into my, I don't want to say insecurity, but like, or weakness, because I don't like the word weakness, but you're tacking into an area you know is vulnerable.
That's the word,
and
yeah.
And you're like, come on. It's like snake oil.
Yeah.
Like, this'll fix it.
And when you're pushed into a place of desperation, I think we are willing to cling on to anything, even if it seems absolutely insane. Like, I don't know, Goop's jade vagina eggs that you put up your vagina to make you feel calm. Like, obviously, you must be in a really shit place. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
If you're going to kind of buy into that, and people do. And that's what's worrying. So I guess... what's like the important thing to do is think, why have we got to this place? And what's driven us to those extremes? And if we can do that in a less, if we can answer that in a less extreme, quick way, then maybe we'll find a more slower but more long-term healing process.
Yeah. So what was that kind of moment for you then? Because if you were living in this world of wellness and then you realised that it was making you ill and you were actually, it was a detriment to your health, was there a particular moment that you realised that, oh no, this is just snake oil, or this is not for me, or... was there a clicking moment, or was it a gradual thing over time?
Yeah, I think it was a gradual thing. I wish it was like a really dramatic kind of turning point. But there were a few things. One, I lost my periods for about 2.5 years. And my I didn't really care about that. But then my sister got pregnant. And I definitely don't want a baby yet. But I did think, oh, shit, I want to have a baby one day too. I need to take this seriously. Mm-hmm. So that was one. And then two, I felt just... suddenly I felt so boring and I was like, I haven't made any work. I was doing a lot of kind of writing and I was acting, but I wasn't making my own work. And I had lost that joy that I normally felt. I just felt really dull. And I was with my friend and we went and saw a show and I just suddenly thought, oh yeah, of course, this is actually what makes me happy. And what I'm doing right now is preventing me from doing that. So I then started writing a show about the very thing that was making me unhappy. And so that, yeah, that really, really helped.
Because I think when it comes to wellness as well, a lot of the narrative over the top of it is this is going to cure you, or this is going to make you better, or all of these different activities. If they don't work for you, then you're fucked, basically.
It's like it's progressed from those like self-help books. Like, I feel like especially with like the rise of the internet and the media, like in the past you could avoid the self-help section of a bookshop, you'd be like, well, just not go to that part. But when it's all around you, I think, or I ask it too, do you think that some of these like wellness influencers, gate lords, I don't know what they're called. I said gate lords, gatekeepers.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Not gate
lords. I don't know what I'm thinking of. What the hell was that?
Well, they are kind of like gods. Maybe that's where your head was going. So,
do you think they've got a much more of a duty of care than they realise?
Oh, yeah. What's really scary is that they offer an answer. Now, the problem is every single human being is... totally unique. Therefore, to provide me with a rule book that says eat this, do this, and meditate then, well, you're not a psychic, you're just someone trying to make money. And therefore, and not only that, When I was auditioning stuff, the way I got into the wellness world was I was ghostwriting for some wellness gurus.
That was the word I was thinking of. Why did I say gate lords?
Oh, I loved it. It's fine. They're just
great.
Religious.
We're going to make it a thing. It's really great.
And I guess when you realise it's one size fits all is just absolute bollocks, then you're going to start to realise that they're selling crap, ultimately.
Because recovery is just as individualistic as whatever kind of stuff is going on in your head or in your life at that time. Mm. Not one of us is dealing with the exact same thing as someone else. Mm. So your recovery is going to be entirely different as well. And to think, because I've tried loads of different nonsense. I tried the meditation, it didn't work for me. And I tried running, it's not great for my mental health because I don't enjoy it. You have to do something that you enjoy. Mm. Like you say, if it's going to the theatre or if it's just watching bad movies or if it's eating crap, if it brings you joy, oh, no, got a bit Marie Kondo there for a second. But if it brings you happiness or a form of contentment, that is self-care. It doesn't need to be, you don't need to be up at 5 a.m. drinking like power smoothies. And
I guess the other thing that the wellness movement does is take you away from, I'm going all hippie here, I sound like my yoga teacher, it's taking you away from yourself. It's an extrinsic answer, and in the same way that alcohol is or drugs are or anything like that, you're taking it off you. And how easy is that? It was so much easier to be orthorexic, which is what I eventually developed, which is it's an eating disorder, which is an obsession with healthy living. An ironic one, I know. That was easier than having to confront the issues that you're running away from, literally.
Pushing them into another...
Into a blender.
Another box.
I actually went to a therapist before, while I was kind of starting to develop this obsession, and she said to me, what are you running away from? And that question was so scary that I ran away from her and just went even further down the wellness trap. But ultimately that is what I was doing.
Is there anything that from that time that you still do nowadays that you do just for you because you do enjoy them, not because you use as a personal use of self-care?
Yeah, I think, and it's it's not a quick fix. It's a bit of a long process. But I think now I'm truly starting to understand what it means to actually listen to my body and mind. This wasn't in the self-care advice that I used to follow from the wellness gurus, but therapy is like a weekly thing that I do and make sure I prioritise. This is one I'm rubbish at, sleep. And now I feel like, go on Instagram, everyone makes me feel so guilty that I'm not getting my 8.5 hours sleep a night. But I'm trying to prioritise sleep. I do eat, I hate saying the word well. I eat...
Fine.
Decent.
I eat decent. Yeah. I like food. I do like food that's not come out of a packet. I do try and do that. But also, I love going out with friends, laughing and having, pizza and loads of bottles of wine. And it kind of scares me how that obsession, because I do call wellness was an obsession, I have flicked a switch. And I guess that's really wonderful in some ways. But in other ways, I'm like, whoa, how did I fall so hard into that obsession? And then now I'm like, that voice in my head has gone. I mean, it went into something else. and now I'm sure it's on the lookout to go somewhere else. But it was an addiction.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Can I jump back? Because you asked me a while back.
Yes.
What were the kind of things that dropped that then made me realise I need to change or get out of this wellness hole? Mm-hmm. I started binging, and I just thought I'd throw that one out there because people don't talk about that a lot. And so I really ate so carefully throughout the day. And then my housemate, who was so obviously a personal trainer at the time, would go to sleep at the perfect hour of 9:30. Once she left, I'd be like, you, the kitchen is mine, baby. And I would get into the, I would open the cupboards and I would, it was like this primal wellness beast would come out of me. And I'd still binge on, inverted commas, healthy food. But if you saw me, I mean, I wrote about it and unfortunately I never got it in the show, but I will get it in somewhere else. And I would like eat and eat and eat and eat. And it was kind of like, it was quite sexual because I had no sex life at the time. It was like this dirty secret that was staining me that I'd feel so ashamed about afterwards. And I'd always, the producer's looking at me like, who is this girl that we got in?
What the fuck is going on in there?
And my T-shirt, like I would end up being stained after and I'd feel so sick and then I'd go to bed and then, you know, I'd do the whole kind of purging the next day. But I guess I kind of had a wake up call when my housemate woke up one night to go to the toilet and she saw me and I was like eating this granola with my hands and I was like, Daniela, you might have a problem. So that was another.
Yeah, the moment you start eating granola with your hands, you know you've got a problem.
What a middle class problem to have.
So at what point did you, after you kind of realised that this was an issue and this was a thing, did you think, I'm going to turn this into an Edinburgh show?
Yeah. Well, I started realising that the industry was so ripe for dramatic potential just because of the like inherent conflict that these people were selling happiness, but they were very unhappy. Mm-hmm. Selling wellness, but they were very unwell. And I was like, well, this opposite is a real treat for me to delve into. So I started talking to my friend, who's a director, and who we'd made a show together a few years before. And she said, great, I totally agree, but we can only make this show if it's about you because I think what you're going through is very interesting. And I was like, hell no. And then we went and saw my friend Richard Gadd's show.
Yes.
And it was all about him. And I came out and I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to write a show about myself. And I said to myself, I can only make this if I really, really commit to getting better, because how the hell, I can't be as contradictory as the wellness influencers, brands that I'm writing about. Yeah. I have to commit and actually make change. So that was, I know that the day that I said I was going to start writing the show, I quit my gym. And this, I can't believe what happened. I wrote and wrote and wrote. And also, it wasn't as easy as just saying, well, I'm not going to do wellness anymore. It was horrible and hard. And I think ultimately, this is a lot of this obsession or any obsession that I've ever had over my life has been to do with control. Mm-hmm. And letting go of that control was incredibly scary, and the writing kept me going for sure, but seeing my body change was really awful. Like, just, I'm not an angry person. I became so angry seeing that and feeling fooled. I can't remember the question.
What spurred you to turn this into a show?
Yeah, sorry. So I kept writing, and on the day that I did the first show, my period came back, and I was like, well, this just proves that I'm doing something right.
This is the best worst day ever.
Yeah, I know. So I guess I kind of just wrote through it and committed to being an example of what I'm trying to write about.
Yeah, lead by example.
Because I just think that writing about these sorts of things really helps you. Because one of the first things I started doing when I started to come to terms with my depression and anxiety was I just opened an empty Word document and put all of my thoughts into it. And I wasn't going to send it to anyone. I had no intention of sending it to anyone. I wrote it for me and then I saved it on my desktop and then I read it later on just to see how I was feeling in that exact moment. Because the moment you start writing it down, you verbalise it in a way that your brain hasn't let you do that yet.
Yeah.
It's usually something so unique. And you can be writing down, write a sentence, go, oh, fuck. And it's like a little light bulb moment goes off. It's like, this is something that's very real.
I've always done that. So wellness was just one of many obsessions that I've fallen into across my life. When I was little, from about 8, I just stopped sleeping. Poor parents, actually. Really poor parents. And one of the things that I started to do was keep and I still really recommend this, I kept like a worry notebook next to my bed, and I would just, this little geeky 8-year-old girl, just used to kind of write every single fear in my brain. It was like doing a literal lobotomy, because I was just literally like chucking it on the page. And that really helped me sleep again, because I was just like, if I put it on the page and shut the book, I know that tomorrow morning I can open that book again, it can all fly back into my 27 annoying brains, and I can ruin my day. So I've always written down, and it also serves as a wonderful reminder when I hope you don't, but you probably will fall into the next hole. Oh, wow, I've done this before. Because isn't the mind unbelievable at how it makes you forget the crap times? So even like post wellness, when I've, you know, had another difficult experience, I just have to look back at the play that I wrote and be like, oh, I've done this before. It came in a different, it wore different clothes, but it's still the same thing. So, writing it down is a really wonderful way of reminding yourself that you can do it.
I found a notebook not long ago, and it was from, I think, when I was sort of really, really, like, struggling and down, and I think I tried to buy into the positivity thing, and I was like, well, all I have to do, it's a mindset, and I'd tried to write one positive thing every day, so no matter what kind of day I was having, started it on January the 1st, guess what day I got up to.
Was it the second by any chance?
January the 3rd.
Oh.
And the first one was something like really sweet, really nice. Oh, it might not have been January the 1st, but it was when I came back to London after Christmas, so around then. And the first day was something really nice. I'd gone out with my flatmate. I'd gone out and I was like, oh, so lovely. The second day, I think I was clutching. So it was like, got something reduced in Tesco. And like literally by day 3, it was like, put on clean socks. And I think by that point,
number 3, you're already telling yourself off.
Yeah.
What?
What
is this?
Isn't
a gratitude journal?
Exactly. And I was like, oh, I can't. I think it's so dangerous to try and like this whole sort of self-care and positivity. Sometimes you are going to have bad days, and that's fine. Like, absolutely fine. You just got to really enjoy the good ones and try not to get too stuck in the bad ones. But
or stop beating yourself up about the bad
ones.
Exactly, I was just thinking about your tortilla Instagrammer or like all the Instagram people I'd write for. Ultimately, what they're doing is turning us into robots. Mm-hmm. And what's not robotic is feeling really weird or like feeling really confused or crazy one day or wonderful the next, or like it's totally changing all the time. And I just think when it's that freedom feeling again of being like, actually, that makes me sound so cringe, and my friends are going to again throw me in the bin. But it shouldn't be cringe. It's true. I should own this a bit. It's about being like, this is what makes me unique and human. And that's the opposite of this wellness movement, which is trying to turn us into these airbrushed, boring, sexless robots. And that's just boring.
It reminds me of like the Lego movie.
Yeah.
When they're just like, everything's perfect. Yeah. Everything's fine. No, it's not.
There would be nothing written. There would be nothing to watch on TV if it was all run by those people. And they're not real anyway.
No, exactly. They'd just be really boring.
Yeah.
All the best things happen after a fuck-up. All the best stories start with, well, I did this wrong the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it is. How did you find... this actually applies to both of you. How did you find writing your shows and then performing them? That jump from this being on paper and this still being your story to I'm going to share my story with lots of people.
It's such a hard thing. If you've not done anything really personal before, it's such a hard thing to make that leap from being like, I've got my guard up, I'm just going to tell sassy jokes and be a little bit like of a sort of enigma to being like, I'm going to be fully me on stage and I'm going to pour my heart out about the two sort of most difficult things I've had to deal with, and you are going to like it and laugh at it. It's quite intense. I cried every day in my show.
Did you?
Every day. And I never cried in the previews. And it was the first day in Edinburgh I cried. And I remember ringing my director and I was like, why am I crying? And she was like, is it genuine? And I was like, well, they're real wet tears. So I'm guessing it's genuine. She went, as long as you're not forcing it, she went, means you've made something special, babe. And aww, so many other comedians, I think, tried to maybe make us feel a bit shit. They were like, hey, you cried in your Edinburgh show. I'll tell you when I didn't cry, when I was in Australia on a tour of that Edinburgh show. Wasn't fucking crying then, was I, when I was on Bondi Beach, you dickheads? No, I wasn't. No. I'll take a month of crying in Edinburgh if I got a 6-month stint in Australia out of it. Arseholes.
I think it's different, and I'm really interested in the differences between, although hopefully my show was funny, I always saw it as a play.
It was.
Thank you. I saw it as a play, and that helped me. We performed the show, I say we, me and Rosie, the director, was my absolute kind of just dream through that whole process. We took it to Latitude, which was hell because my show was a play and we were taking it to this festival full of high people hungover or on a come down, and it was the first time I'd ever performed it. And I remember saying to Rosie, how the hell am I going to get through this? What the hell have I decided to do? And she said, Dans, this isn't about you. And that was really helpful. And that was the thing that changed the kind of creation of that show, because I was like, actually, this isn't about me. This is about telling a story. And this story, unfortunately, is affecting more and more young, vulnerable people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even have to be wellness. Wellness is like the superficial layer on the top. It's about someone lost and desperate and in desperate for someone to provide them with answers, that finds something that latches on to all of that vulnerability and then just takes them for a ride. And then I thought, well, this isn't about my own healing. This is about me trying to raise awareness of that important issue. So every time I felt scared or unhappy or whatever, I kind of took the focus out of me and into the audience. Really, I did. I like visualized that. There's your wellness word. It just did some visualizations. And that was like the way that I got through it. And then straight away, it started resonating with so many people. And I had I still get so many people messaging me via Instagram, and me being nosy then clicks on their profile and they've got these like glossy, perfect lives. So it just shows that everyone's struggling behind their filter.
Yeah. Do you think that the self-healing and that raising awareness can be married together?
Absolutely. I feel very lucky that that's the case. To hear people tell me that my show has made them feel listened to, or they've recognised themselves in it, what a privileged position to be in. Most people spend their days hiding their problems, keeping their head down, and no wonder their problems gets worse and worse and worse, and they cling on to the coping mechanism which is making them sick in the first place. I was able to kind of hijack that and jump out of it and share it. So yes, it does, and I feel almost guilty because of that privilege, if that makes sense.
No, it does, because I feel the same way as well, because when I tend to write stuff starting from a very selfish point of, I'm going to write this about me and I'm going to see where this takes me on this journey. And now we're 10,000 words in and I'm having an existential crisis.
Yeah.
But it is almost, I feel selfish kind of doing that. But then you hear the responses back about people reading your story. And I always think that whenever I do any work, I always just want one person to be able to take one sentence from something I've written and take that into their day-to-day life, and then I've done my job.
Oh, that's great.
And that's all I want to do. And I think kind of sharing stories, and be it different stories, is so important.
And also totally. Just showing, doing the absolute opposite to what Instagram is doing. That's all I want to do in my work.
Yep.
Like, show everyone that things can be really messy and confusing and complicated. And if you can look at that curiously, is that a word?
Yeah. It is now.
Yeah. Is it?
No.
No.
Well, it is.
Oh, no, I know what it is.
Oh, it must be.
Yeah. As I say, I'm writing. Is that a word?
You're in a room with writers. There we go.
Yeah, with of curiosity, then how amazing is that? And yeah, I guess I just want to keep making stories that share that mess, because that's where drama and comedy and community comes from.
I think that's why people like seeing people be real on stage, be it like theatre or comedy or whatever, because we're so desperate to be perfect and to hide behind these screens now. So to sit in a room and watch somebody live in front of you, not necessarily bare their soul, but just to be fucking honest, is almost like you're kind of looking around like, is everybody else seeing this? They're not bullshitting. Like, oh my God, this is... It's almost unusual now because we're so used to this kind of, like, say, picture-perfect, filtered lives, that to see someone just being like, I've had a shit day, or, oh, this isn't as good as it seems, or, oh, I've got this, I struggle with this, that you're like, oh, I forgot. I forgot that there is a... Out of this bubble, there are normal people with normal... Not that people online... Well, no one online is normal, are they? We're all freaks, but... That's what I want you to take from this podcast.
Right? Yeah. Like, that's why I... That's exactly what I want to experience when I watch something, which is I want to sit forward and be like, oh, I felt like that too. And I think that, Instagram, all of that, anything kind of filtered and airbrushed is the opposite, and it's actually not what we really need. It's taking us away from what we need.
Definitely.
I just think that kind of idea of honesty nowadays, it has a new meaning, because we are so used to things being dishonest online and kind of not being the entire truth or this kind of curated version of the truth.
Like, the word honest gets used as like a compliment now, like, they're honest, and I'm like, but that's a good thing, like, you shouldn't be surprised.
Exactly. And now that we can open up and we can discuss things that are usually kind of a bit taboo and kind of brushed under the carpet, it's so refreshing to just see other people going, do you know what? I'm a bit fucked up as well. Here is how I am fucked up.
Yeah,
and going, oh, cool. Yeah, okay. We have that in common. Yeah, let's be friends.
And also, what's lovely about that, and shows kind of across Edinburgh really now, and London, and everywhere, is that it doesn't have to have like a perfect finished ending. And I fear that what the Instagram hashtag mental health story is doing is saying, I was ill and now I'm better.
Yep.
And now I don't think it, well, I know personally that it's not as simple as that. Even, you know, my wellness journey, I keep using inverted commas, I'm realising that there's no one watching me. But like, it doesn't just end and then you're fine. Like, you have, it's an ongoing, it's being a human. So of course it's not just going to end perfectly.
It makes it feel like there is a cure to these things when there isn't. You just get to learn to live with them, not in spite of them. And it's that there is such a big difference between those ideas.
Well, it's acceptance, isn't it? It's taking the fear away of kind of striving for whatever this weird perfect life is, which is ultimately boring.
It's like you don't get given an instruction manual, but over time you write your own on how to. So I feel like that's why when you first start sort of struggling with things, you're like, but I've no idea how to cope, and it takes a long time, but you just have to write your own little instruction manual for how to cope with you and how to fix you. Oh my God, I'm so deep. I'm fucking impressed with that.
That was great.
Don't dare edit that out. That's fucking not. I'm genuinely
give this girl a book deal.
Yeah, there we go.
I feel like I've just had like an epiphany.
I guess, what you've just said is it's your own manual. And before you said to me, when you go in a shop and you see kind of this self-help everywhere, well, don't those books, I'm sure they're wonderful and helpful, but they're just one person's story. They are not your own.
Exactly.
So don't put all of your, money,
put
brain,
all your mental health
it.
In one basket.
Yeah.
Exactly. You started off so well, and then the mental health basket analogy
ruined
it. I'm
so smart. No, I'm buzzing. I'm buying myself a treat on the way home.
Last question, which is, I can't phrase this correctly. Can you remember how to phrase it? There you go.
If you could go back and give your younger self advice on, not necessarily mental health, but like living without misery and living well. Ooh, that well word again. what would you tell your younger self?
Can I give you a few?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'll do them in...
alphabetical order?
I'll do them in a rap, actually. No, I'm joking.
There's the drama school coming in.
Yeah. I actually do know the Mel B, Missy Elliott rap off my heart, but I'm not going to do it now. Sorry. I really challenged my parents growing up. I don't think they had experienced... Well, I know they had never experienced what I had gone through or have or continue to go through with my own, I call them 27 brains. so I really pushed my parents. And I remember my dad, he had no patience for it. He didn't get it. It was a very old-fashioned man approach. And then I think he realised, actually, this girl's struggling and I'm helpless as a parent, but what I can offer her is this. And he said this one thing, and I now pass it on because I still listen to it. He said, life is a bit like snakes and ladders. He said it's really easy to slip down the snakes and like a cool little slide and find yourself at the bottom, and you can really stay there. It's quite comfy. It's really fucking hard to climb up those ladders. I held on to that, and I find that really helpful. So I still struggle loads sometimes, and we all do. But saying to myself, well, yeah, of course, that's part of the process mm-hmm. of being a human being, and I'm going to climb up this ladder. I'm going to, like, go through it and feel it and yeah, climb up it and not slip down all the snakes all the time. So yeah. That's one.
Yeah. Fuck snakes.
Is that worth, like, crediting my dad for?
Do we think definitely.
That's good?
Yeah, that's great.
I think it's quite good.
It's really good.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
You fall down a lot quicker than it takes to get up.
Yeah.
100%.
Two, and I still need to remind myself of this sometimes. I would like to tell my younger self that sometimes it feels like you will never get out of the dark tunnel, and it can feel like that tunnel goes on forever and ever and ever. But there, you can lose all faith in that. But I just, if anyone is listening, I want to remind you that there is an end to that tunnel. You will not see it when you're in the middle of it, but there is an end. And then when you're out of the tunnel, those tunnels are, in my head, like lots of different colours. And so then you have this like wonderful palette of many different colours, which then means you can relate to everyone and all their different colours that they're bringing to you. So now, like, you can tell me your shit and I just will not judge you, because I have so many colours in my palette that I'm sure I'll like recognise yours somewhere. Mm-hmm. Mm, don't know where that came from.
That was fucking brilliant.
Was it?
Yeah,
nice.
Really,
yeah. Thanks.
You two have been very prophetic in this entire thing. I've said fuck all.
Third, I don't know. Don't overplait your eyebrows.
Oh yeah,
because they won't grow back.
My ma's got no eyebrows.
Really? Because she plait them too much.
Yeah, and it took me so long to realise. Yeah. I was about like, because when you see someone's face every day, and when my sister got married, the makeup artist was like, what expression do you want to have? Yeah. And my mum was like, well, happy, I guess. Like, it was a wedding day. Then she got bored halfway through and wiped her eyebrows off. I was like, oh, man.
Oh, my God. Nah. In my head, by the way, I'm coming up with a whole self-help list.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love it.
I've got one more then.
Yeah, go for it.
I say this to my friends all the time, but I worry because I think some people will hate me for saying this, but it's just two words. Look out. Sometimes it's so easy to just stay looking inwards, mm-hmm. and just going outside and looking out at other people and talking and engaging properly with someone else's shit is a really good way sometimes of just giving your own 27 brains a break.
Like that. Yeah.
Perfect. Amazing. Mm. I like it. Yes. Well, in that case, I think we're amazing.
Thank you.
No, thank you. That was amazing.
We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences. We can help each other know that things do get better.
That's it. That's episode 11 over and done with. Thanks to Daniela for letting us bother her. Thanks to Lauren, as always. Thanks to Dave for letting us make this weird little podcast. And thanks to Calm. Once again, and I'm sorry for mentioning it all the time, but if you could rate, review, tweet about the podcast, tell your gran about the podcast, put the podcast on at parties. Actually, that last one's a really shit idea. But you get where I'm going. The more people that listen, the more money that goes to Calm, which is why we're here, really. Well, half the reason. Half normalise the conversation around these topics and half raise money for charity. Right, that's enough of my stupid voice for 1 week, month, year. But please come back next week. It'd be really nice if you did. And bye, 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 bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.